This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good morning, Lexington and beyond. You are listening to WRFL 88.1 Radio Free Lexington.
WRFL Lexington.
My name is Brian Connors Menke.
And I'm Khaki Urch.
And you are listening to Trivial Thursdays.
Usually with Mick Jeffries, but neither of us are Mick Jeffries.
Mick is off preparing his nimble fingers for a rigorous day of ukulele camp.
Right. He's a ukulele professional.
He is, actually.
He teaches ukulele as a gig.
It's blown up.
More than a gig. It's like a full-time job. It's not even the gig economy. It's a full-time job for him. But my best favorite part about what Mick is doing, teaching the ukulele, is he's got us a nice mnemonic, right? Not a pneumatic. Okay, so we're not breaking cement here. It's a mnemonic to remember the main ukulele strings, okay? So it's G, C, E, A are the strings. And if you want to remember that, especially if you're a five-year-old, all you need to know is George Clooney eats ants.
Exactly.
Isn't that how all the professional musicians remember the strings?
Absolutely.
So, Brian, what happens on Trivial Thursdays?
Well, we sit here and sometimes we're prepared. And we play music about the trivia of the day, July 14th. And then we have amazing guests that Mick still, of course, had lined up.
Correct.
And we talk to them about what's going on in the community.
Right.
And so, there's no shortage of amazing birthdays or trivia.
No, today's a big fat day. I stayed up late last night learning.
Yeah.
Today's a big day.
There's a lot of good stuff. So it's the birthday of one of the greatest, most influential, important musicians / activists / you could put them into a lot of categories, I guess. Woody Guthrie.
Yes. Woody Guthrie. This land is your land. This land is my land.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Woody.
This machine kills fascists.
You know, for some reason, I was veering away from playing a lot of overtly political stuff of Woody's this morning. I don't know why, because I love a lot of Woody's.
Okay, first, maybe they're new. Okay, maybe they're new. Maybe they're under 27. Okay, so Woody Guthrie. Brian.
Yes.
Small bio inserted here, please.
Go.
Woody Guthrie, one of the greatest folk songwriters in American history. He was, in fact, the writer of This Land Is Your Land. This Land Is that's the whole title of the song, but then the rest goes, This Land Is My Land, George Clooney Eats Ants, that we all learned in school. And many of the other greatest folk songs from that tradition and passed away at a very young age, but a great influence on many of our current everybody who picked up an acoustic guitar and everybody who recorded with a four-track in their basement, even though they didn't know it. So, but he was a politically active person. He put himself out for the working man, and he did have This Machine Kills Fascists carved into his acoustic guitar. And he was an Okie, wasn't he? Was he from Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
Died in New York City. So, very young. So, Brian.
Yes.
So I guess you're not going to play the hit?
No. Okay. You know me.
The hit is This Land Is Your Land. And you know, there's a big copyright controversy on that right now. Did you know that?
No, tell me.
It was in the New York Times yesterday. His family is making the copyright very difficult for people to use, and they're quoted as saying they want to keep it out of the hands of people who have politics that wouldn't sort of align with Woody Guthrie's, people who might have what they view as harmful views. They can't have this land is your land. So yeah, it's in the New York Times. It's a fascinating case study. You know.
You know, you got so much information for this. It's I'm loving it.
Yeah, I clicked through. I clicked through on a lot, Brian, for you.
I know.
All right.
I know.
So what song will you play?
I will play something political then first.
Okay.
Because you got me all pumped up now.
Right.
Talking all political. I can't turn back.
It's historical now.
Well, so I'm going to play something from Mermaid Avenue, the Wilco Billy Bragg collab first.
Did I mention they impacted? I just used impact as a verb. Shoot me now. Did I mention Woody Guthrie was an influence on all your guys, right? Whoever picked up an acoustic guitar, Wilco, that little guy, Billy Bragg, you know him.
Yeah. So here's a pro union song. I guess I planted with Billy Bragg on the leads for us here on WRFL Trivial Thursdays. Now maybe I'll back it up with a more a sillier song, which I'm a fan of Woody's silly stuff a lot too. So. Here we go. Keep it locked, and we've got a lot more music.
Trivial Thursdays, WRFL Lexington, Khaki and Brian Connors Mankey. We're here till 9, if you can believe it.
Okay. All right. Woody Guthrie, the one and only.
Woody Guthrie. And what's the trivia today about Woody Guthrie?
July 14th is the man's birthday.
It's the birthday. Is it coincidental that today is also the day that they stormed the Bastille? You know, like the people.
Right.
Right? Power to the people.
Yep.
Or in France.
I do have a lot of mixed favorite things covered in my music selections as well, because it's Bastille Day, right?
Right.
So I'm playing Rush.
Mick. Mick Jeffrey's not here, but you are here, and you are at Trivial Thursdays, WRFL FM, 88.1 FM, your University of Kentucky student-run radio.
And
Khaki Urch, Brian Connors Mankey.
I mean, if you don't and Scott Shapiro.
Scott Shapiro. Hi, Scott.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Okay, well, Scott Shapiro is in charge of innovation. What's your actual title, Scott?
Chief Innovation Officer.
For the city of Lexington.
In Mayor Jim Gray's office, yes.
Okay. In the Mayor Jim Gray's office. And, well, we're thrilled to welcome you, and you're going to talk to us today about the University Cities designation that Lexington has.
Absolutely.
So, if you're new, because sometimes at this time of year we have new people, because we have new students, we have new parents bringing their students in for registration and all the summertime activities, and we also have new faculty members moving to town, you know. So what is a university city's designation? Who gave it to us? What do we do with it? And what does it mean?
Well, I made it up. So let's start with that.
You know what? In academia, we call that a God term. Right?
Great. We are coining the term university cities. What I say is that I've discovered a new species of city. We did a big research project, big statistics project.
We being the mayor's office?
That's right, exactly. Yeah, okay. So Mayor Jim Gray wants most of his folks to really use data to make decisions as often as possible. We did a benchmarking project that really led us to this research project around...
Okay, and a benchmark is something that you compare. You take all the similar characteristics from a different group and you compare those. Those are the ones that you... So University of Kentucky has some benchmarks that we compare ourselves to. We hope to be like, or we say we're like. And so you did this benchmarking study.
Right. So there are these cities that we're actually very similar to. We share this DNA with these other university cities. So cities that are between 250,000 and 1 million and have a major research university in the center of the city. This actually doesn't work if they're outside the city. If the research university is in the center of the city and more than 10% of the population are students, you get these six cities. And if you look at their data, sort of the character of the cities, they're all extremely similar and very different from most other cities.
Okay, so you undertook this, and in the possibility were all cities of that size, and you winnowed it down, you narrowed it down by finding those similar characteristics. And so, okay, Article A was us, Lexington, right? Because we were the one we wanted to compare to. But who else? What other cities in America came up as quote university cities?
So the cities that share the similar DNA are, along with Lexington, are Madison, Ann Arbor,
Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Ann Arbor, Fort Collins, Durham, Chapel Hill, and Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, some of these cities are sort of known cool places. Like, I think people generally...
Like Lexington.
Of course, Lexington. Right. Oh. Madison, Ann Arbor. Fort Collins is becoming more known as a cool place, more microbrews per capita.
Yeah, I got a job offer. I got a cold call, like in 2001, they offered me the editorship of that paper.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Well, it's a fantastic city. That's sort of the bottom line for all these cities. We can get into some of the statistics, but they're all cities where there's a tremendous amount of arts and culture, lots of cool things going on for such a small place, for not being a very large city. But they're all sort of uniquely positioned for the 21st century economy, and we can dig into that a little bit too.
Sure. And so you've brought along with you sort of – as Brian and I spin off actual trivia that's not really trivial, obviously Bastille Day was a big deal in its time, right?
Trivial but, now, whatever. Right.
Who cares that it's Happy Chandler's birthday?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Okay, I know. I'm just tasting and teasing.
You're just putting your toe in the water.
Who cares that it's the birthday of the man who made the symbol?
I know.
On Led Zeppelin 4,
yeah.
Right?
All right.
Okay, but Scott's got not trivia, but in fact, I think what they call evidence-based stunning statistics about Lexington that we can't wait to kind of tease and taste along. Scott, what's your background to be an innovation officer? You know, like where'd you get this notion?
Well, I had been in the private sector. Most of my career went back to school, graduate school late in life, age 40, to segue into public service.
Who are you calling late?
early.
Okay.
But in the private sector, I had a consulting company. We worked with a lot of startups. And so I've always been fascinated by new ideas and how those new ideas get traction.
Okay. All right. Well, we're here with Scott Shapiro from Mayor Jim Gray's office. He is the, what do you call it?
Chief Innovation Officer.
It would be CIO, but then people would think you were the Chief Information Officer.
Right. That's not good.
Right.
Chief Innovation Officer.
Chief Innovation Officer. Okay. Brian Connors-Mankey here at the controls. My name's Kaki Urch. We're both in here for our good friend Mick Jeffries, who's out teaching the ukulele. George Clooney Eats Ants. G-C-E-A. Those are the strings.
yes. It's another birthday today.
What is it?
Gerald Ford, speaking of Ann Arbor.
Oh, speaking of Ann Arbor, yes. Speaking of trivia.
He's a Michigan man.
Speaking of trivia, well, I was the person who got the first call that told the nation that he was dead because I was the editor out of Palm Springs.
There you go.
So the Fords called our reporter, Bruce Fessier, who has the closest ties to had the closest ties to the Ford family out in Palm Springs. He called us, and we just let it rip on that special section.
I love that we don't really talk about anything beforehand on the show.
It always works because you're the universe, baby.
Well, because I know your sea of knowledge and connectivity is so broad and insane that no matter what...
You could say I'm like Zelig, but I'm better than that. I like that Shapiro gets the Woody Allen joke. Okay, so...
So Gerald Ford's birthday.
Gerald Ford's birthday. And tell people who might be new.
Yeah.
Okay. About Gerald Ford.
Wait. Is that what you want me to do?
People don't know. Some people don't know. Okay. If they're young, they don't remember that we had a president named Nixon who resigned in the 70s, and thus a man named Gerald Ford, who was his vice president, was a football, you know, mm-hmm. This is going to hurt you, like needles and pins sticking into your Ohio State body. Yes. Oh, it's kind of like, it's like, oh, I was going to make a Irish hurling analogy. In any case,
you're still on Dublin time.
I know. It's like Tipperary versus Kerry and the Harling. In any case, so Brian's from Ohio State, and Ann Arbor, of course, is the home of Michigan, which plays the football game. And Gerald Ford played for Michigan.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a great athlete.
He was a great athlete. And then he later became a great golfer. A great, if you're watching the classic Saturday Night Live with Chevy Chase.
Loved to make fun of Gerald Ford.
Yeah, he loved to make, I'm Gerald Ford and you're not, is one of the most famous comedy lines ever. No, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
Physical humor.
Poor Jerry Ford used to fall down the steps of Air Force One once a month.
38th president, born 1913.
Okay.
1 year after Woody Guthrie.
Okay. Republican.
Yes. And I dug deep and found this lovely Oscar Brand song. It's a presidential campaign song for Gerald Ford. It's like a little folksy, like, you know, early 70s song.
You like just, the ones that Trump has? Does Trump have songs?
He does have a song. But that's why I'm reaching back for a time of more innocence when there's just like this really simplistic.
Right. Everybody had a jingle.
It's a jingle. It's a total jingle song.
Does Lexington have a jingle?
We're working on that.
We do.
Get it. We need a jingle.
We do have one. I used to start my
We have
show.
That jingle that Ross sent me that jingle.
The Elm Hill Bill meets jingle. Lexington, that's my hometown.
That's my hometown, and highlighted tobacco.
Yeah, highlighted all the things around town back. And this is in the 60s is the song this
tobacco.
From.
We're open to new suggestions.
Had I known we were going to talk about it, I would have had my 45 ready.
I used to have that. Ross Compton made me a mix, and he had that from you somehow.
Yeah, I started that. I started my show with that for a few years.
He loved it. He sent it to me in Palm Springs.
All right. So Gerald Ford.
Okay.
It's called "I'm Feeling Good About America."
Okay. So which campaign? This is for the one he lost miserably to Carter. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Just checking. Because the first time he became president, it was like a middle of the night, pass
right,
the torch deal, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So without further ado, Oscar Brand, our friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sort of Brand.
Hello, WRFL listeners.
Hello.
You just heard Ry Cooter.
Ooh, I love Ry Cooter.
Yeah, of course.
Love Ry Cooter.
Yeah, of course. Didn't I just say, oh, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, of course. That was Billy the Kid, because today one of the most famous American deaths, 1881, Pat Garrett shot Billy the Kid. Or so it goes.
Okay, so Pat Garrett was the sheriff, and he shot Billy the Kid, the outlaw.
Yeah.
Okay. Establishing forever Quick Draw McGraw.
Mm-hmm.
Who made Quick Draw McGraw?
Hanna-Barbera.
And why do I care about Hanna-Barbera?
Because it's Joseph... Is it Hannah or is it Hannah's
birthday? It's Hannah's birthday, baby.
Yeah. I got stuff for that. For
yeah,
sure.
But what about that other animator today? He's a big deal.
Oh, you got so much stuff.
Yeah, no, the one that came up with Betty Boop. Yeah. That one. It wasn't Priestley.
Yeah, it's Priestley.
No, it wasn't. It was three guys. Three guys in New York, in direct competition with Walt Disney at the time. Seen a brilliant documentary about him. I'll have to open up Wikipedia.
But yeah, 1881, Billy the Kid.
Okay.
Shot. And also the birthday of William Hanna, which we haven't gotten to yet.
All right.
You try to jump way ahead of me on that one.
I'm just, you know.
I wasn't prepared to talk about all of the goodness that has been brought to you by
Are you trying
William
to control
Hanna.
The narrative?
Yes, at all the right. moment.
Okay.
But that's neither here nor there again, because we should talk more with Scott.
Right. Scott Shapiro is here, and he's a chief innovation officer in the mayor, Jim Gray's office. And he and the mayor's office in kind of doing strategic planning for the city of Lexington. Always better to proceed with a plan than without.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Did somebody ring England on that? I mean, what is this Brexit? No plan. Lexington has more of a plan than Great Britain on the Brexit.
We do have a plan.
Okay. So in doing that, they looked at some pertinent numbers. They found that Lexington is a university city, and it aligns with several others in the nation that have these positive characteristics. Lincoln, Nebraska, Fort Collins, Colorado, Madison, Wisconsin, Durham, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and
which one did I miss?
Lexington.
Yep. Madison, six. Ann Arbor, Fort Collins, Durham, Chapel Hill, Lincoln.
Lincoln, Nebraska, right. Yep. Not far from Omaha. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of these cities, what's interesting is that they are not the major city in their state. So when a lot of the public research universities were first set up, they were done outside of the city. The idea is to have the to move it away from the turmoil of the city. And so a lot of these cities didn't actually do very well in the 20th century economy. When it was a good idea to have a river right next to your city if you wanted to grow and ship goods around.
Manufactured goods.
Exactly.
They came from smoky places.
Exactly. And that's why Louisville grew so quickly, right, in the 20th century. Lexington, not as quickly.
But they still had a strategic plan-ish that was formed at the country club, right, where they said, hey, let's invite IBM in here, mm-hmm, right?
So that's an interesting part of the story. So the idea of university cities is that while these cities didn't grow as quickly, and in the 20th century economy around manufacturing, they are growing very quickly and are poised to continue growing in the 21st century economy, where sort of talent and education and brain power is really what's driving high wage jobs and economies. And that's really where the university cities are poised to do well. And I think IBM was one of the first companies to really recognize that. When they did their first expansion in the 50s, they very strategically put their new large offices near major research universities.
Right. And Lexington had the wisdom at that time to think through, let's don't have a smokestack city, since we don't have a river anyway, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so Scott, you were talking about some of the statistics that you've come forward with about Lexington's own growth, and one that you told me just knocked me out, the percentage on that, the growth.
Right, so Lexington is growing at about 13.5% per decade. All of the university cities are growing, in part because when you have a concentration of educated talent, as these cities do. So university cities have about 40% of their population have advanced degrees, mm-hmm, versus about 26%.
And you qualify that as something like the master's level.
BA and above.
BA and above.
Right, exactly. Whereas the nation, it's more about 26%. Mm-hmm. So when you have this concentration of talent, what that does is it drives a lot of things. It drives this outsized arts and culture sector. So this is the way I talk about it.
The Athens of the West, if we might interject, right? For if you're new, Lexington, Kentucky used to be the West because California was still to be. So, you know, anything west of Virginia, which Kentucky was once it was split off from the state of Virginia, you know, so with our great culture here, it was called the Athens of the West, and some people still call it that. We have a theater group in town that calls itself Athens West based on that cultural profile of Lexington from those days.
And Transylvania was already rolling out graduates at that point.
First medical school in the country.
Right.
Transylvania.
And it's, you know, a great liberal arts college here, mm-hmm, headed by President Dr. Seamus Casey. Yeah. Right.
Go with it.
No. Yeah, right. Well, we can have him someday.
Yeah.
Like he was talking about
The growth, the
new folks moving into town earlier,
yeah,
and it's,
right,
you know, what I say is that this data sort of shows what people already know about Lexington, that it's a fantastically cool place. So with this growth of educated individuals here in Lexington, what that does is it drives this outsized arts and culture sector, and it's there in the numbers. So in university cities, there's 47%, that's a lot, that's a big number, 47% more arts and cultural institutions per capita than other cities our size.
And so what's another city our size, or one or two, that are not university cities? So they're hanging at the same population numbers, but they don't have a city, a university sitting in the center of them.
Sure, like Dayton, for example.
Dayton.
So these are what Lexington has, being part of this group. We can't help but be part of this group. We can't plan to be in or out of it. We just are a university city. It sort of defines our character. We looked at data ranging from arts and culture to entrepreneurship to unemployment to violent crime statistics. And it turns out these six cities, they all share this DNA. So, for example, all these six cities, they all have incredibly low violent crime rates. This is a surprise to us. So we know that Lexington, if you look at the data, is the safest city of its size in the country in terms of violent crime. That's what the data show from the FBI. And it turns out that all the universities have low violent crime rates.
I'm not surprised by that, because I don't think of it, of the city, as a crimey city at all. You know, I think it is a very safe city. But for us to be the safest, you know, according to that, and that's the nationally gathered FBI data that looks at number of homicides, number of rapes, number of assaults.
Per capita.
Yeah, per capita. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, does that include the whole everybody in the Fayette-Urban County?
That's exactly Lexington, Fayette-Urban County.
And it's not surprising in that in the last few years, I've met more people here that have been out and about at, of course, art and cultural events, which are bountiful, and striking up a conversation. I'm like, why did they move here? And they're like, we chose Lexington purposefully, without necessarily even having a job to come to. I mean, they had like leads and prospects, but they chose Lexington over any other city they could go to. They were like, well, we were thinking about Asheville, or we were thinking about X, you know, or we were thinking about Chattanooga, or we're thinking about any place, and they were like, we chose Lexington because A, B, and C, arts and culture and low crime and cost of living and all these things.
Right.
And I've had these conversations with people out and about at events, and I'm just like, they just chose, I mean, moving from like Malibu. They're like, you know, didn't want the cost of living anymore in California, and it was like, we chose to come to Lexington and start a new life with our family.
Well, that's fantastic.
And there's the 13.5%.
Right. Well, and the 13.5% over a decade,
So that's still a big number.
No, but that's a big growth rate. Yeah, I mean, if I had 13.5%, you know, on my investment,
Lexington is interesting, and it's going to keep getting more interesting. Density produces sort of interestingness. So we have, as you all know, the nation's first urban services boundary here.
Can you tell people what that is?
Sure. So this is actually part of my unproven theory that university cities have sort of better governance over time that leads to slightly better than average decisions over time, which leads to a better city over time. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of examples here in Lexington. We've got the nonpartisan merge city-county, which creates a lot of efficiencies, a lot of cities that aren't able to do that.
So that's when you hear Lexington, Fayette, urban county government, that means, what was it, in the 70s, they smushed it together. Because in Kentucky, we have 120 counties. For a less populous place, the county is the ruling entity, but we had a city that was really big, so they put that together, and then that urban county made the service boundary, which denotes
what? Well, the service boundary came a little bit before that, but that's one of the benefits of living in a university city. The university professors helped with that process of combining the city and county and creating a nonpartisan city government, which I think works really well.
Right. So when you vote for your mayor, people say which party they are, but it's a nonpartisan thing. We don't have a Republican and a Democrat person running. We could have all Republicans, and we could have all independents, all Democrats. It's just the people who put forward the platform that the most voters like.
Right. Paving is not partisan.
We don't. Oh, I like that. That's a slogan.
So we, and just another example of sort of this, I think, better than average governance over time is that decision in 1958, I believe, to have a urban service boundary that hems in development and preserves the rural area and the horse farms, and that breeds this density. We're a very dense city, and that's what breeds innovation, and that's really the heart of why university cities are poised to do very well in the 21st century economy, is having all these knowledge economy jobs that are...
What's in the knowledge economy?
So it's, you know, think of it as the broader tech, but the broader sector. So obviously technology jobs, design, engineering, those kinds of things. So the
science?
Absolutely. Anything science related.
Okay.
Get those research park jobs.
Well, right, because I'm just thinking about all because of the medical concentration
yeah.
here.
Absolutely.
Sure. All the
STEM fields.
Yep. You know, we do so much. You know, we're so well known for, say, pharmacy because mm-hmm. of the University of Kentucky School of Pharmacy, which is one of the nation's best.
Mm-hmm. And there are companies that are spinning out of that the pharmacy group as well, and that creates sort of this continuous entrepreneurship here in Lexington. So we are, you can look at the data in terms of business starts. So the university sees have a rate of business starts, so entrepreneurship, that's about 16% higher than other cities our size. It's about the same level as the largest cities in the country. So we're a very entrepreneurial group here.
Percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. So it's not the same gross number. But
per capita.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. All right. So Scott, what are we doing with all this knowledge about our city? What does it mean now that we know that we have the university city's profile?
Mm-hmm. So what that helps us as a city government do is help do some planning. So this, when we had this idea, that led to the idea of trying to become a gigabit city. We know that super fast, with an economy like Lexington's, relies on the knowledge economy, again, the STEM fields, medicine, science. We know that that relies on super fast internet access. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we are pursuing becoming a gigabit city, which we're making a lot of progress on.
Okay, so what does that mean? That's the reference to the up-down rate, right? So how fast you can get a gigabyte of data up from your computer or download it. And so if you're moving big data sets or if you're moving 3D, I saw a great 3D visualization of the student center project mm-hmm. that they're working on, right? Mm-hmm. You've got that going on, or you've got some huge sector of design for the web or something that you're working on. Or if you are a media professional and you are making
yes,
movies.
Yeah? Absolutely. Right? So I have a good anecdote about that.
Okay. So you need a big fat fast pipe down. Okay. So so tell us the anecdote about the movie makers.
So we, in this pursuit of becoming a gigabit city, which really means building a fiber optic network here in Lexington. So right now, most people get their internet access through old telephone lines, DSL, or through cable lines. You're through a cable modem. And what that does is it limits the technology, just limits the speeds. And it also means that it's never going to be as fast when you're uploading stuff. But we, as the status shows, we're a city of creators and people who are creating things, not just watching Netflix all the time. And so we need, with a fiber optic network, what happens is that the speeds you have going up, which a gigabit is 1,000 megabits per second. Speeds going up are the same as coming down. So, if you're uploading or downloading an HD movie on, a cable modem, it's about a half an hour. On a fiber optic network, it's about 30 seconds. We talked to a bunch of businesses here in Lexington, about their experience with the internet at work. And we got some really, really, I mean, obviously the technology industries, businesses all want more and more. But we heard from some non-technology companies, like just photographers who need to move around these big files. We had one guy, this is going to, this story is so painful to hear. one guy who creates HD movies out of his house. Not full-length movies, sure, but sort of corporate videos. He said that it's faster for him to put this HD movie, if he needs to upload it to the web, to put it on a USB drive, drive to Cincinnati, plug it into someone's computer and upload it, and then drive back. That would be faster than doing it from his home office. And we can't have that here in Lexington.
That is an ouch.
Right, right. That does hurt because it's, you know what, that's like 7 hours to upload your 20-minute video.
It's really painful. And we are a city with a lot of creators, a lot of people who are, whether it's video or it's visualizations or it's large-scale data analysis. We're a city of creators, so we need this super.
But also telemedicine
access,
too, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a big focus, is the telemedicine thing, and both ends need help to get all of that digitized medical data.
That's right. My wife does some of that for the university.
So, yeah. So we're here with Scott Shapiro, who we're Brian Connors Mankey and I here on WRFL Lexington Trivial Thursdays are happy to welcome to Mix Show, Mix Off Teaching the Ukulele. So
let me take a quick break.
Yeah, yeah.
For some kind words.
Oh, yeah. We have kind words.
And then we will also play a quick song.
Okay. What's our song?
Regroup.
What's our song?
Our song will be for Happy Chandler.
Happy Chandler, who was the governor of the state.
Twice.
Who was a beloved state icon.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the grandfather of former Congressman Ben Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
And
presidential hopeful at one point.
Who was a presidential hopeful, and he was baseball commissioner,
yep.
When Jackie Robinson first played and broke the color line.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He was from 46 to like 50 something like that, somewhere around there. We're going to hear the great Howlin' Maggie.
Okay.
Promise to be Happy.
Oh.
Right? And of course, you know who the lead singer of Howlin' Maggie is?
No.
Happy Chichester from RC Mob.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
This is an inside Cleveland reference.
So I'm doubling down with the
okay.
The
RC
happy.
Mob equals Royal Crescent Mob,
right?
Right. Royal Crescent Mob equals one of the first bands that WRFL ever played. We had a festival outside
before RFL was on
yeah,
the air.
Yeah, right. We were just still an organization trying to make a radio station, and they came down and played at our first outdoor festival. Sure.
Yep, Columbus, Ohio band, and. Happy Chichester lead singer, still going at it today.
Really?
Great musician, great songwriter. And so this was a band that he had in the 90s. And this lovely song that we're going to hear after our kind words is Promise to be Happy, by Happy, for Happy.
Wow. You're so reflexive. Self-reflexive.
That's how we do it here on WRFL 88.1. All right, it's back with you here on WRFL 88.1 Radio Free Lexington Trivial Thursdays. Keke Urch, Brian Connors Mickey, Scott Shapiro from the Lexington Fayette Urban County Government's
Mayor Jim Gray's office, the Chief Innovation Officer, talking about university cities.
Who has a connection to RC Mob.
Right. Okay, so RC Mob, Royal Crescent Mob, which spawned this song we just came out of, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Promise to be Happy for Happy Chandler's birthday. And the lead singer also name is Happy Chichester.
Okay.
So we're happy all over the place. And as soon as we play the song, Scott looks at us and says,
Well, Scott, what did you say?
I said I smooched my wife to be for the first time after a Royal Crescent Mob concert.
Okay, so we want do tell, Mr. Shapiro.
So I was in going to college in New York City. My roommate grew up here in Lexington, so I was down here with him visiting. And for New Year's Eve, and we went to a Royal Crescent Mob show in Cincinnati with his friend, my future wife. I didn't know that at the time. And we went to the concert and really had a great time.
That sounds like a Bogart show, maybe.
Yes.
Okay, that's right.
Just putting the time together and RC Mob would have been in their career.
Well, and we've been married for 20 years, so thank you, RC Mob.
Wow. We are just thrilled to hear that.
That is great.
We are thrilled to hear that. Brian, having went to college in Columbus, where RC Mob is from, and us, of course, as a radio station, having been one of the first bands we presented here in Lexington, the WRFL really presents a lot of fantastic musical performance.
Absolutely.
Here, part of its mission. We brought RC Mob down. They played outside at the Hagen Hall field, which is no longer a field.
No field.
No, it's not a field anymore. It's okay, so it's now, it's the field that is now, the field formerly known as Hagen Hall Field, now, and then for a couple of years, known as Central Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Lyman T. Johnson Hall.
There you go.
Right? Named after our first African-American graduate student, first integration. So... yeah, you think I'm not following the ball? I am totally following the ball.
So, Scott, we were talking, of course, University City stuff, and then
you have a conference.
You also have a conference coming up here in the fall, because you will
No, not in the fall. We're working on it. Might be the spring.
Okay,
well,
what's
in the
conference?
You're teaching.
I am. I'm going to be teaching a class.
Here at University of Kentucky in the political science department.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that endeavor.
Sure. So I'm going to be teaching a class on municipal innovation. So it's a smaller class. I think they call it a seminar. My first teaching gig. So let me put that warning out there. but we're going to be talking about different ways that cities are experimenting these days.
Fantastic. And you actually come with some pretty good academic credentials. Okay, just having studied at some of the leading places in America on government. So so hip hooray for poli-sci.
Yep. And then so tell us a little bit about what the possibility of the conference in the spring, who that would involve, and what would that be?
Right. We've been doing some planning with the Gaines Center here at the University of Kentucky around this idea of a conference. And we've worked with them in the recent past on the University City's idea. They have a annual Lafayette seminar where they look at civic issues, and we worked with them, and they invited we invited down the mayor of Fort Collins, one of the university cities, an amazing gentleman named Mayor Wade Troxell, who is a 30-year-long mechanical engineering professor at CSU up there, Colorado State University,
which
is now
Fort
the mayor.
Collins, right.
Exactly. And he really understands and believes in this idea of university cities being extraordinary places. So he came down here and gave a lecture about this idea of Fort Collins as a university city.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're hoping to do is to have a broader conference where we've got all the leaders of these cities and some academics and some think tank folks who've expressed some interest in foundations and folks from Lexington getting together to talk about this idea, talk about some of the research, more research that should be done, but also what's happening in these other cities. I'd love to do more of a policy swap. I think because our cities are so similar, the DNA of our cities is the same. And so part of the idea is that if something is working in Madison, if it's working in Ann Arbor, it's more likely to work here in Lexington.
Well, and we have some things to export, too. I mean, Lexington has innovated some of the best civic policies that I've encountered. You know, the whole concept of the Hope Center and helping people get on their feet and deal with addictions and and deal with that, partially due to, you know, Lexington, Fayette, Urban County government leadership and Councilwoman Deborah Hensley, you know, that. And the Herbie Kirby thing. We were first with the Herbie Kirbys, for sure.
We do a lot. There's a lot of innovation in government that's happened here in Lexington, starting with the urban service boundary, nonpartisan city government. We were early on the smoking ban, early on the fairness ordinance. Mayor Gray created this affordable housing trust fund along with the city council.
And that's part of the comprehensive homelessness task force. It's not
right. He created an office of homelessness and has a gentleman named Charlie Lanter heading it up. And they're really innovating. Talk about municipal innovation. These guys have started this program called Housing First, where if someone is homeless, what they do is they get you a place first, sort of get that stability and then bring some of the services around that. It's been really successful. We're one of the first cities to really dive into it, and it's working quite well.
Right, and they just had a roundup. They had a roundup study where they showed the progress over a year of implementation, and that was all, again, based on research that was done by a stakeholders group, all sorts of stakeholders involved in homelessness, including folks who have been homeless, who are homeless, and other people from service organizations and the government and law enforcement, just all putting in to try to innovate from where they know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this sort of innovation, we're a city that sort of accepts new ideas and accepts academic ideas. So our police force, for example, Lexington Police Department, this is one of the most highly educated police departments in the country. So many of these people, of the leaders of the department and other folks as well, go through EKU, which is one of the great criminal justice programs in the country, get their master's. They were they've really dug into this idea of community policing, which other cities are starting to figure out is super helpful. And they've been doing it for some time.
Well, right. And Lexington Police actually just put out a really wonderful survey online of stakeholders, of people in the community where you could, this was months ago, comment on how well you thought they were doing, how well you thought body cameras might be on police officers, how well the community and the police officers interact, sort of basic questions that maybe aren't being asked in a proactive way in some cities. But Lexington both has been asking those, and then on the heels of the different police issues in other cities, came forward and said, okay, community, let's have some say. Are they going to put the results of that out?
I don't know, but okay. It would be my guess that they would.
Okay.
And so, Scott, thinking about when you had Mayor Truxell here from Fort Collins, so some of the ideas about, okay, these cities are the university cities that we've designated, that you've, you know, what kind of collaboration would you like to see moving forward with a lot of these places? Like you talked a little bit about, you know, what other people are doing good for us. We can export some things as well. Mm-hmm. What kind of relationships we want to see going forward, and in what capacity, and what official capacity?
Sure. Well, I would love to have an ongoing relationship with these other cities where we do these policy swaps, where if we have a policy question, those are the peers that we go and talk to first. We do a lot of that already. We have great relationships with the folks in Louisville, Chattanooga, some other places where we can easily make New York City. We can make a lot calls.
Right. The mayor was up in New York City. He powwows with New York City leadership quite a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah. There's this great story of when he was first elected, he went to go meet with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who, as a former New York City person, did a terrific job in New York. And sat down with them, and that's where he got the idea of creating the bullpen. So in the mayor's office, we don't all have sort of little offices that with our closed doors. We're in this big bullpen all together with the mayor in the center. And he got that idea from Mayor Bloomberg, and also from Gray Construction, where they have an open office. Mm-hmm.
The construction firm that bears the mayor's name, he doesn't run it now because he's mayor.
He was the CEO.
Yeah, right.
For a number of years, helped grow that to one of the leading, if not the leading, builder of large manufacturing plants here in the U.S. Really amazing. They built these massive, you know, BMW or Volkswagen or Siemens, these massive manufacturing plants. They helped build, of course, the Toyota factory in Georgetown. Mm-hmm. Impressive group.
So say I'm a UK student and I'm going to take Professor Shapiro's seminar, right, in poli-sci, and I expect it's a high-level course, and I expect there's some prerequisites. What kind of things would we read or look at? Are there thought leaders on this? Are there thought leader concepts on city innovation that we introduce in a seminar like this?
There are. There's a few different ways that cities are approaching innovation. First, one of the thought leaders is a gentleman named Bruce Katz at the Brookings Institution. We've done some work with Brookings. It's a brilliant think tank in D.C., helping us with our some of our economic development work.
Do you work with David Jackson down there?
I don't.
Okay. He's a geographer. I know him from 20s.
But cities are approaching innovation differently. Some of them are setting up offices. Some of them are working, are creating offices around performance management. It depends on how you define sort of innovation. Performance management metrics around sort of identifying what cities do, services, and how do you make those, how do you increase efficiency and do things better, faster, cheaper. And some cities are really sort of more free to just create new things and experiment. And that's part of the idea around innovation, is not being afraid to fail.
Fail fast, right? Mm-hmm,
exactly. There's a group in Boston called the New Urban Mechanics. What these guys do it's mostly a technology-oriented group. They're creating lots of apps to make life in Boston better.
We have new apps. Lexington has new apps, don't they?
We got apps, sure.
Yeah, we just brought them online. My student just did a story about them, right? You just brought some apps online?
Well, we have our 311 app, and we have something you can sign up for called CityGram, which we created with Code for America, a really cool group. So you can sign up, and this is just the beginning of it. I'm going to tease that a little bit. There's more to come. But CityGram, you can sign up and see things that are happening in your neighborhood, give it sort of a radius, you know, quarter mile, mile, you know, what's happening in terms of code enforcement
or
foreclosures.
Really?
Or building permits.
This is fascinating.
We hope to do more with it. Yeah, we created that with, along with Charlotte and the and Code for America.
Wow.
So you can go sign up for CityGram.
That's great.
Wow. Where do we sign up for CityGram?
I would Google CityGram.
And
what
Lexington.
I would do. And Lexington, and it'll get you right there.
Okay. But you were going to talk about a blog. You've got some innovation blog, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So we're keeping track of the research that we're doing and the presentations and the media coverage. We've been it's been great to have like the Daily Beast and some other folks write about this idea of university cities. And that's all on universitycities.org. You can sign up there and get updates when things are posted and keep track of this research project.
I'll tweet that out.
I'll put it on the.
Yeah, we'll tweet it out as soon as our hands become free from our mouths or whatever we're doing. Can you? You have a child, so you could do two things at once.
Sure. And so, that will be, if you can't afford or you're not in line to take Scott's class this fall.
Right.
Just follow along the blog. That, you know, you're getting like.
Right.
your discounted education.
Right. It's like an MOOC.
It's like a MOOC.
It's like a MOOC. Multiple, what is it? Massive
Massively open, open online course.
Right. Mm-hmm. A MOOC.
Can I just say that I knew I was going to have fun with you guys when I first sat down? For everyone out there in Radio Land, when you come in, there's just a ton of pictures and posters and stickers all over.
And this is our temporary
station. This is our new, this is our new place because we had one in the in the student center that is, of course, now under renovation. So
that place had some real history.
The bathroom graffiti and the previous spaces. What do we have? We have glitter.
When I first sat down, I saw this Chuck Close drawing of Philip Glass, and I thought, these guys are going to be pretty cool. I'm going to enjoy this.
Well, we're just – go ahead, Brian. No. You're going to say something?
No, I was just laughing. Okay. That's what I do.
Do you have another bit of trivia?
Sure. We can play something real quick for the Joseph Hanna.
Okay, Hanna-Barbera.
Yep, because we didn't get around to it earlier. And before you caught me off guard with the other animator, it was Dave Fleischer.
Fleischer, yeah. Right. So that and
who was an early competitor to Disney. Yeah.
Right, he and his two brothers in New York City.
But I think William Hanna, that's better, because we love William Hanna. I love Hanna-Barbera, everything Hanna-Barbera.
Okay, so...
And I love Hanna-Barbera World, the old days at King's Island, where you could walk around and Fred would pat you on the head.
Okay, so Hanna-Barbera, for people who are new, okay, who are the Hanna-Barbera people? Fred and Wilma of the Flintstones, Barney and Betty of the Flintstones.
It's vast. I mean, my Scooby-Doo.
Oh, Scooby-Doo for generations of generations. I mean, I loved Scooby-Doo.
Even non-animated stuff like Banana Splits.
Oh, God.
I remember those guys.
Right? So that was...
The Banana Splits?
The Hanna-Barbera tapped... Sid and Marty Croft on the shoulders and said, hey, we want to work with you. Can you do some of this other non-animated kind of stuff that will play into a show that has animated things in it?
But yeah, Tom and Jerry, babe. Tom and Jerry.
Splits were part of
Well. What else? These guys were both MGM directors is what they were formerly. Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound.
On and on, all the good stuff, all of the good cartoons from back in the day, and
they did the open. Okay, they did the opening credits for Bewitched.
There you go.
All right.
Who loves the Jetsons? You love the Jetsons?
Josie and the Pussycats, Harlem Globetrotters, The Pebbles and Bam Bam Show. Let's see.
I'm gonna play the a Jetsons favorite.
Adam's Family, the Jetsons. Oh, is the Jetsons?
Yeah.
Oh, the Jetsons.
So I'm gonna play a Jetsons favorite and
Hong Kong Phooey.
That's a personal favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. Hong Kong Phooey.
Hong Kong Phooey is the best.
Okay.
Scatman Crothers.
Is that who Hong Kong Phooey?
Yeah.
Scatman Crothers
is
Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. You blew my trivia out of the water. I got nothing.
Well, we're going to listen to another classic college radio staple doing some Jetsons stuff for us here on WRFL at 88.1 Radio Free Lexington.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Know Your Own. It's been a WRFL watchword. We had a compilation called Know Your Own, and now you need to know your own University City. We are here on Mick Jeffrey's Trivial Thursdays because Mick is out teaching the ukulele. I'm Kaki Urch. He's Brian Connors-Menke, and we've been talking with Scott Shapiro, who's the Chief Innovation Officer of the City of Lexington in the Mayor's Office. And Scott, it's just been a pleasure to welcome you, your ideas, your first smooch with your wife after a Royal Crescent Mob on New Year's Eve, right? So you were just the closest dude. You got very lucky.
The next 20 years, yeah, all happened by accident.
OMG, you were proximal. That's it.
R.C. Mobb inspires that.
You could do like a Bayesian analysis of who else she could have married.
Alternate universe.
Yeah. I know. Wow.
I'm glad it was me, though.
Yeah.
Let me say that.
We are too, because she's the Lexingtonian. She's the Lexington route that brought you back here.
That's right.
Yeah. So she's a Lexingtonian, and you moved back here to help innovate our city after all this great training in other big cities. So, what if a Lexington person has an idea or a query about innovation here in our city?
Sure. So you can my email address. I'll give that out.
Okay.
I'm going to stall here while you get a pencil ready, because I know so many of you are doing that.
Okay.
Can email me at the city at sshapiro@lexingtonky.gov. So sshapiro at lexingtonky.gov. Yeah, if you have ideas, we'd love to hear them.
Or if people have liked something interesting that you've talked about, like these different – the Code America thing,
Code
and the
America.
Different
Citigram.
Apps. Citigram.
Yeah. On our website, there's an apps page. You can look through it. There's a bunch of different apps that are on there, and you can download them and use them. The 311 app is pretty great.
Right. Well, the 311 service in this city is amazing. And if you're new and you have a question like, when are they going to pick up my garbage? When is the free day to use the dump for everybody in the city? Yep. What streets are going to be closed for this parade when? Mm-hmm. All of these questions. You just dial 311, and some lovely person on the other end always knows the answer, is cheerful and sweet.
It's true.
And also the blog, universitycities.org. You can follow along and learn more about what a university city is, what is happening with those, and where Lexington fits in all of that.
Exactly.
Right.
UniversityCities.org.
Okay.
So once again, thank you, Scott.
Thank you, guys.
And
I know.
We'll do a quick break of music and then invite our next guest in. In this day in 1973, Kentuckians, probably I'll go on record as saying the most important musical Kentuckians, even though I'll get a lot of flack from that. But the Everly Brothers called it quits in 1973. And the last time I saw Mick a couple weeks ago, we talked Everly Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And then he played Wake Up Little Susie on the ukulele for me. But we're going to play Kathy's Clown, because that's maybe my favorite song.
Okay.
And so, yeah, 1973 last. They did reunite later, but this is the end of the Everly Brothers.
Yeah, massive, massive impact, and a great, great history of catalog to give us. Yep. This is part of
Let's
it.
Let's listen to those sweet brotherly harmonies, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
WRFL 88.1 Radio Free Lexington. Trivial Thursdays. Keep it locked. The Everly Brothers with Kathy's Clown here on WRFL 88.1 Radio Free Lexington.
Trivial Thursdays.
And now, part two of the show!
Right. Because we're here on Thursdays from 7 to 9 a.m. And we are filling in for our good friend Mick Jeffries, who organizes this and invites the guests and really does a wonderful job.
Let's give him too much credit.
Years, right.
We're the ones really lugging all the heavy weight today. I mean, come on.
Right.
He didn't.
I got this Marshall Stacks. Right, I'm just... Hey, Paulie, get the high-low.
Really nice.
I know. You think I've not worked a union game?
And our next guests are from Glean, Kentucky. Glean, KY.
Glean, Kentucky.
Yeah. Glean. G-L-E-A-N. Glean. Okay.
Making me really get my,
No, I'm telling you.
Stretch my ish.
Glean, Kentucky.
E-I-O-U.
We just have to be clear, because Glean is the operative noun in the organization.
And our guests are here, our friends. Introduce yourselves.
Sure. My name is Ben Southworth. I'm the development coordinator at Glean, Kentucky.
And my name is Stephanie Wooten. I'm the executive director.
Welcome.
Well, thank you for having us. It's good to see you all.
And full disclosure right off the top, just so we get it out of the way, Ben, former general manager at University of Kentucky student-run radio station right here in which we sit, WRFL, from the years 2013, 14?
2014 and 15, okay. I think, yeah.
And a University of Kentucky graduate, just graduated, has a degree from...
Yeah, the Arts Administration Program here, or department here at UK now, newly...
A new department.
Newly
yeah,
deemed
newly,
a department.
Newly made a department, Arts Administration. We got a number of WRFL alums who've... matriculated through that program.
A really great program. Yeah. Really love it.
Stephanie,
my time
are here. You UK grad?
I am.
Where did you study?
I was a biology major.
Wow.
AS, woo!
That's fun. Yep.
Brian's a former AS faculty member.
Okay, yeah. you guys have a... You guys have a hand signal and a whoop. You're practically a black sorority. What's going on with this?
I don't even work there.
AS whoop. I don't. CI does not have that.
I'm sorry.
Common information.
I'm sorry.
We're coming back at you.
Do you got a handshake? We got
We're
a handshake.
We're coming back at you with some sort of a guttural noise.
All right. Bring it.
And a hand signal.
Okay. All right.
We didn't have one for the Arts Administration program
not
either.
Yet.
Not yet.
You had to wait to be a department.
Right. we're appropriately able to, yeah.
Well, tell us first about Glean Kentucky, the thing. Why I care so much about that word and why that's the operative word in your function. Stephanie, you want to take
sure.
a whack at that?
Yeah, that's an important word. So Glean Kentucky was founded in 2010. Glean is a biblical word, and we really embody sort of a modern spin on the word gleaning. We gather excess produce mm-hmm. wherever we can find it, so farms, grocery stores, farmers markets, backyard gardens, really wherever we can find it. And we deliver it to agencies across Central Kentucky that feed those in our community that are in need.
Okay, so what is the, there's a biblical passage where, is it in the Old Testament?
Yeah, Book of Ruth.
Can you, Ruth is my middle name. I love the Book of Ruth.
There you go.
There you go. So can you tell folks about what the Bible says about gleaning?
So, really, it was on the shoulders of our farmers many, many years ago. The farmers were asked to leave the corners of their fields for gleaning, for those in their community, the poor, the weary. And what we've done is taken that concept and modernized it. Our farms aren't right in our backyards anymore, at least mm-hmm. not for all of us. Mm-hmm. And so we use volunteers to go glean from our farms and bring it to those in need. But Ruth was a widow, and she gleaned, and gleaned for her family, and in many cases that's happening through Glean Kentucky today.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So, Ben, can you tell us a little bit about, I know that there's some special event coming up, is that right?
There is. This Sunday, it's been kind of day in and day out for the last couple weeks preparing for it. It's called Burgers and Beets. It's this Sunday at Wallace Station from 5 till 8 p.m.
And that's B-E-A-T-S, not B-E-E-T-S.
B-E-A-T-S, although our logo is a beet. So it does play off that pun. We'll have a quinoa burger with chopped beets in it. That's not your only option, but it is an option for our vegetarian visitors and guests. We'll have live music from The Swells with Chris Sullivan and crew. We'll have all sorts of games for children.
He's such a player.
He's wonderful.
Such a great player.
And he's been playing for, 10, 15 more years in Lexington just in several different capacities.
I most recently saw him with Warren Byram at mm-hmm. the Art Center. They did a downtown Art Center black box.
One of the Sunday
right.
showcase things that they've been doing. Those have been really fun.
Yeah. What a performance, mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Okay, so what is it? And Beets? Burgers and Beets?
Burgers and Beets, yeah.
Okay. And so where is it?
So it's at Wallace Station. It'll be food from Weta Michael and her crew.
Okay.
Drive out old Frankfurt Pike.
Yeah, straight out in Versailles. If you go out old Frankfurt towards Midway, kind of pretty close to the crook of old Frankfurt and Midway Road.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Out there. Yeah. So.
And so this is the fourth annual?
Yeah.
And this is one of your, this is like your big big fundraiser.
Yeah. So it kind of accounts for between 15% and 20% of our annual budget, making that up and helping us kind of glean, even in times where the harvest season has ended, when farmers have, called it quits for the year and taken a couple months off during the winter. It helps us fund the gleaning we do at the grocery stores and other places, restaurants, in the winter.
Okay, so you take the biblical term of the four corners of the growing fields, right, the crops,
mm-hmm.
but then when crops are fallow, you go ahead and say, okay, grocery stores, we're gleaning your corners.
Yeah, and okay. Maybe you can, Stephanie, sure. Talk about Lucky's has been huge recently and some of the other groceries.
Lucky's is a new grocery store in Lexington, and it is originated in Boulder, Colorado.
It did. Yeah. So we have a lot of really great grocery partners, Lucky's being our most recent partner, and we glean 364 days a year. We don't glean on Christmas Day because our groceries are closed. But we find a way, even when the farms aren't active in this area, we find a way to glean, and most of that is through our groceries. We glean from Lucky's every single day, and they have been an absolutely wonderful partner and changed a lot about who we can serve and how many people we can serve. We are gleaning about 20,000 pounds a month.
And how many folks does that help? Yeah.
We serve 60 agencies in Central Kentucky, and last we totaled, that's about 50,000 families a year. And it's across
some big
Central
numbers.
Kentucky. Yeah. Most of our activity right now is in Fayette County, where we were founded, and, mm-hmm. and most of our partnerships exist, but we are slowly extending beyond Fayette County and hope to do so even more in the future.
So how do folks, what sorts of folks get these this produce? It's produce, all of it, or is it? It's not meat,
right? It's exclusively fresh produce.
Okay.
We don't do
okay.
frozen, canned, or meat products, dairy products. We don't do any of that.
Okay.
We sort of found a little niche mm-hmm. when we were talking to feeding programs early on. We knew that produce was expensive and perishable, so therefore we knew it was thrown away pretty frequently on one end, and then not accessible on the other.
Right.
Our agencies just don't have the budgets to add a lot of fresh produce to what they're serving.
Right.
So we sort of try to fill both of those gaps. And really our rules, if you will, are the produce can't be sold, and it needs to go to people in need. And really that's as specific as we are intentionally, because we have so many really great feeding programs and feeding efforts in this mm-hmm. city and in Central Kentucky, and we want to support all of them. So we don't have a lot of requirements.
Who are some of the groups that get that glean harvest from you guys?
So they really run the gamut. We have large agencies like God's Pantry and Hope mm-hmm. Center that serve thousands of meals, or in God's Pantry's case, they serve 50 counties in this region, all the way down to smaller church feeding operations. Nathaniel mm-hmm. Mission is one of our mm-hmm. model agencies. They do such a fantastic job utilizing the fresh produce that we bring them.
And that is that the one down on?
It's on Versailles Road.
Okay.
Closer to downtown.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they serve meals, lunch and dinner weekly, okay. and do a really great job of, when we bring them eggplant or kohlrabi, they do a good job of Googling away and figuring out how they can utilize the produce. So
That's great. I don't know. What else do people need to know? Are you always looking for volunteers?
Absolutely. We could always use volunteers. We utilize over 400 volunteers a year to carry out our mission. As I said, we glean almost every day of the year, and most days we're gleaning from multiple places. So we need a lot of really dedicated folks to help pick up food and then make that delivery to an agency.
So if people have a car and feel like doing something to help, it's also an element of sustainability too, right?
Absolutely.
It's kind of a complete environmental move, right? Because all of the resources that go into the front end of building a produce crop that's about to be tossed are not wasted then, and they go straight through the circle to actually becoming nutrition. So it's a very So if you're looking for, if you have a car, because that would be part of the pickup part, right? You pick it up and you drive it. So, well, that would be a really interesting volunteer opportunity.
We like that our volunteers get to see the whole process. Mm-hmm. So each of our volunteers gets to be a part of a pickup. Pick up from a grocery or a farm, and make that delivery to an agency. Mm-hmm. So they get to see our entire mission.
Well, and be part of it too, right? Not just really see it.
Right, exactly.
You know, but that's great. Mm-hmm. So what's the weirdest produce you ever gleaned?
There's something called Buddha's Fingers.
Okay.
So name alone, I think, probably encapsulates.
What color is it?
It's orange. It's a citrus. It's you know how you would like zest a lemon or a lime? That's how you utilize this piece of produce. We had to look this up when we received it. Okay. We were like, what is this? And it looks like fingers.
And Stephanie used to be the business manager of the Lexington Farmers Market, so she's got a pretty good handle on what produce is what and what it looks like and how to use it, but...
That's not a local piece of produce.
Right, and we get stuff even that Stephanie has a hard time identifying from time to time. Definitely. You know, and me to a greater degree without that experience.
And what does it taste like?
I think it's like an orange, like a citrus, like a an orange flavor. You would zest on top of a fresh salad or... Nothing like grating something that looks like fingers, you know? Something not so...
Oh, dear.
But, yeah. Well, you passed it on all the same.
Well, that's
to
great.
To an agency who could use
that's
it.
That's great. So people knew what to do with it.
Yep.
Let's take a quick break. Words from our friends. And I've got a song that will tie into, of course, Glean Kentucky.
Of course you
do. And trivia.
Nice.
And trivia. Okay.
Because that's the way we roll. So, yeah, keep it locked. And
WRFL.
Back more with Trivial Thursdays in one moment, please. Belly on Trivial Thursdays with Feed the Tree.
Because we're here with Glean Kentucky.
Yep. So you feed the tree, like with water and sunlight.
Okay.
And then it feeds you with produce. See how that works?
Okay, and then these Glean folks come along and glean the produce.
Indeed.
And bring it to people
in need
who are hungry.
Yep, you got it.
It's about that simple. Yeah.
See, Belly had no idea.
Oh, they did.
Oh, okay. I've got notes. Brian Connors, Mikey Kaki are here with Ben Southworth and Stephanie
Wooten.
Stephanie Wooten being the executive director of Glean Kentucky and Ben Southworth being the development director. Is that right?
That's true.
And you are a nonprofit. You're a standard 501(c). Is that right?
Yeah. That's correct.
Founded in 2010 and still going strong, but yeah.
Where are you based? I mean, do you have an office? Do you have trucks? Do you have a...
getting more of that stuff all the time. We have an office over off South Broadway. Pretty close to the corner of Maxwell and South Broadway. We've got a big 12-passenger van without the passenger seats for gleaning at farmers markets and going out and collecting things. At Lucky's, a lot of times we'll need it for the larger quantities. Costco we do as well. And we just got donated in February or January.
Yeah.
Yeah, a big 26-foot box truck. With our logo and everything wrapped out on the outside of it. It is spick and span.
Oh, so
it is,
if you see a box truck that says Glean Kentucky, that is the nonprofit group going from place to place around the city daily except for Christmas. Daily except for Christmas when the groceries aren't open.
And so 2010 to now is still pretty short, you know, time.
Yeah.
How what did it look like when it first started in 2010? And, like, take us through the growth a little bit of, like, getting big box trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
And looking with a big outlet like Lucky's or...
Mm-hmm. It's been crazy. When we were founded in 2010, we really initially started with our local farmers market as a way to connect with our farmers, with the market itself, and learn a little bit about what types of excess there was, where we could find it. And I think pretty early on we're shocked by the quantity of excess produce, both at the market that was left over from a week of markets, you know, that the farmers didn't want to haul it back to their farm if it wasn't going to last until the next market.
And was mm-hmm. that, and was that you, was that your undertaking?
That was not my undertaking. There were three friends still involved with the organization in different capacities, but three friends who sort of had some discussions about hunger in this city, and one of them was a gardener and knew about some personal experiences with excess, you know, like your squash plants are going crazy and all your neighbors run away because you keep giving them squash.
Anybody want zucchinis?
Yeah, right. They're like, nobody's home. Zucchini. Yeah. This is the seventh time you've asked me. No one's home. So, you know, they wanted to experiment with connecting these two concepts, and so they were the ones that reached out to the farmers market initially and forged those relationships. And I think, you know, the goals were pretty modest, and they were shocked by how much produce was out there and how many agencies needed produce.
Should we name those people to give them credit?
Sure. Yeah. So that sounds nice.
Yeah.
So the three founders are Erica Horn, John Walker, and Jennifer Arena.
Okay.
And both John Walker and Erica Horn are still on our board to this day, so they're very involved.
Okay, so were they like students or?
No, they were all working professionals. They all had different roles. Jennifer came from sort of a healthcare perspective, mm-hmm. So she knew about the importance of produce and nutrition. John was the home gardener, peddling his excess squash. And Erica had a calling to feed the hungry. That was her passion. And so they met through a gardening series that John was actually conducting at Erica's church and got to talking. And so we really should do something about this.
What an example. What an example of just a community
Absolutely.
Level of what Scott Shapiro was just talking about.
Yeah. Yep.
Sure. We'll take produce that you go around in a truck and pick up, and you'll do it every day, and you just kind of grassroots it together, and then all of a sudden you're feeding 50,000 people.
Right.
Yeah, it plays on both levels to both the, entrepreneurship of University City,
right.
and then also people who are in professional positions, right? So like the educated class, just, you know, to some degree, right? So, but because the high number of
part of let's call them part of the knowledge economy,
yeah,
right.
My brain doesn't work in the morning. I couldn't think of the.
I know. I don't know why. It's Thursdays.
But yeah, I mean, great example of that and how something like that happens in Lexington, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. And so, is there a website?
Yes. GleanKY.org, GLEAN.
Okay, and on this website, there'll be more information about the Burgers and Beets fundraiser.
Yeah, there's information on there about Burgers and Beets, about signing up to be a volunteer, donating at other times, whether it's your time or your treasure. Kind of our annual reports are on there, our partners, those that we donate produce to. Are listed on there to a great degree, although that's changing all the time. Lucky's has allowed us to add a lot of partners to the Kentucky Refugee Ministries, mm-hmm. Is one that we've added in the last 3 or 4 months, mm-hmm. And they do a cultural orientation every Friday over at Arlington. Is Arlington Christian Church? Mm-hmm. Arlington Christian Church out on North Limestone.
Near 12th.
Yeah, I think right around 12th
yeah.
or 11th Street over sure. there. And they have people from the Congo, from Latin America, from South America, from all over the world, Syrian refugees coming in and kind of trying to figure out how to traverse, you know, Kentucky and Lexington when they've, you know, never been to America before.
Right.
And, you know, food is a big part of that. So we try to get produce out there and do a little bit of a kind of an educational portion of that where we're helping them identify what it is. We took 250 pounds of blueberries over there, and one of the Congolese women said, I don't know what those are. I wouldn't know how to use them. And we just, you know, it's the barriers are interesting to see with different cultures kind of coming together in that. And, you know, the things we take for granted, you know, how to eat blueberries is something that.
Sure, because in the DRC, there's very little of that main sort of
mm-hmm.
climate.
Yeah, climate. You know where you grow the blueberries. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah.
And so you talked, about the growth. Still, Lucky's obviously it sounds like it was a big factor recently in terms of their new, and they were being able to help you out. And then you said Costco as well.
Which
is also obviously a huge store. And so, how long ago does that go back with
Couple
Costco?
Years. Yeah. When Costco first moved into Lexington, like Lucky's, when they first moved in, we approached them right away and have been gleaning since day one.
Right.
Well, so, now here's a question. So, even though we come from this, you know, Book of Ruth gleaning on the four corners of the crops, no one of who's your volunteer is actually going out into the pea patch and picking food.
We are, actually.
Okay, well then tell us about that. I'm interested in that.
That is another element of what we do. So we have farmers who call us and say, you know, can't get to this field, I don't have the labor, or it's about to frost and I've still got a quarter of an acre of peppers sitting out there and I don't want them to freeze. And so we have what we call a rapid response team. We use the wonderful world of texting to sort of like a phone tree, a text tree, alert a bunch of our volunteers, hey, we need to be out on this farm at this time. It's usually within 24, maybe 48 hours that we need to be out there.
Because here comes the frost.
Because here comes the frost, or, you know, these things are ripe now, and, you know, another week they wouldn't be, obviously. So we gather our rapid response team, and we head out to the farm, and we glean. Glean just like Ruth did.
Wow. Do you teach the people how to pick each?
Yes.
What sort of things do we have on farms locally that you guys actually respond to?
We respond to anything and everything. We glean a lot of greens in the spring. A lot of spinach, Swiss chard, some beets and radishes. That just tend to all come on at once. So a farmer may plant a substantial area, but then, you know, with rain and all of our lovely spring weather here in Kentucky, you know, there'll be 1 week where everything
will be ready.
So you guys
are literally out there in your boots in the beet field, pulling up the beets.
Yes, that is exactly what we do. And we do a little training. We don't require our volunteers to, you know, have experience beet harvesting, but on site when we're out at the farm, usually the farmer's involved.
Can I just jump in here and say beet farmers? Wah, wah, alternative music joke. Okay, I had to.
Loved
go.
It, yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Put that in the queue. Yeah.
Right.
We do a little training with the farm so that the farmer feels comfortable with us out in the fields. You know, they give us instructions on where to be and where not to be, and we go.
What's the hardest, you know, most difficult thing to harvest?
That is a really good question. I'd have to say
it used to be tobacco, but I bet
you we don't glean any tobacco.
You steer clear of that is quite the difficult
harvest.
And we'll leave that for somebody else. But I'd say things like peppers or tomatoes, where you have to sort of be discriminant in what is ripe and what isn't. Corn, it's, you know, they're easy to pull off, but in terms of, you know, making choices on what to take, it takes more time. When we've got spinach, we're just going with a knife and cutting down the row.
Okay. You know, I think that this would be a great field trip for Luke.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Bring it.
And we, you know, it's the sort of thing
Brian's
that
Brian's son, Luke, is, what, three?
Almost, yeah.
Luke Lajoie is three. Where the food comes from.
We have a lot of families involved.
Yeah, we have lots of little kids. We had, you know, we'll have groups from Lexmark that will come out, you know. I think Lexmark kind of allows, like, volunteer days for their employees to come out. And
they encourage that.
Yeah. And so we'll have people that have never, you know, grown a vegetable in their life, but they get out and it's, you know, it's not
the
a
knowledge
huge,
economy.
Yeah, it's not a huge learning curve.
There's knowledge right there.
And then families that can come out, you know, we have 5 and 6 year olds that can, you know, easily get down and pull radishes, compared to some of our older retired volunteers that, you know, are more adept at kind of running things and, you know, communicating and driving places and everything.
The lack of bending.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have to bend down and cut a squash off, you know.
I could drive for them. I can drive a box truck.
Everything counts.
Yeah, that's important. We need people who can drive our box truck.
Right. Yeah.
Let me take one last break.
Okay.
Before we come back and talk just a little bit more with Ben and Stephanie.
And what happens at 9? 9 o'clock?
Amy Goodman talks to you with her
Democracy
army,
Now.
Her army of journalistic integrities
all over the world.
All over the world.
Democracy Now.
So it is Bastille Day, and if I don't play Rush, Mick will probably get mad because he loves Rush. And so I'm going to do well by him, and we're going to play Bastille Day by Rush, which is an early Rush song, so it's not like full-on Tom Sawyer level of
I don't think, I think the first day that somebody put a Fleetwood Mac record on this air, I think we lost, the kids with their Fleetwood Mac, the new alternative Fleetwood Mac. So yeah, anything's possible.
And now we're coming back.
So keep it locked and come and bring it down the home stretch here on Trivial Thursdays. Rush
with Bastille Day.
Here on Trivial Thursdays.
On Bastille Day.
On Bastille Day. Some year long ago, French did some stuff.
I think it's a pretty rememberable year. Don't we supposed to remember it? Isn't it 1789?
I think it was. I used to remember. I think it is 1789.
It's either 1789 or 1798.
Was it the same year? 1789. Yeah, it's the same year the Bill of Rights. I'm thinking it's something else that it collides with in American history.
Let's all pretend like we know really well.
If I speak more confidently, people might think I actually know something about American history.
Right. Yeah. Go with it.
Have no clue.
It was the Bill of Rights, and I'm sticking to it.
Mm-hmm. Here on Trivial Thursdays, there's 12 articles in the Constitution. Article 2, Article 12.
Right. Mm-hmm. So sounds good. Ben and Stephanie, before they head out and before Amy Goodman talks to us.
Of Glean, Kentucky.
Event this Sunday.
Yeah.
At Wall Station.
And Outversales Row.
Give us the specs on that one more time.
Sure. So it's Burgers and Beats this Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. It's out at Wallace Station, which is out Old Frankfort Pike, close to the intersection of Old Frankfort and Midway Road. We'll have food from the kitchen of Weta Michael and her crew, a burger, as well as like a veggie burger with quinoa and chopped beets if you're a vegetarian. We'll have other picnic foods. We'll have L.A. Crank and Boom ice cream, West 6th beer. We'll have a silent auction, games for children, live music from the Swells with Chris Sullivan and the other two folks that he's bringing along. It's kind of hard to predict, who he will have because he plays
another,
with so
many. Another element of our, university town economy is the brilliant number of civic-minded artists and musicians that come forward at all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful city.
Yeah, it's going to, I think, make it such a much more dynamic event than it would be if it was just, sitting out and eating, and that's nice to do on a Sunday in July anyway. But I think, with a band and, games and everything going on, it's going to be just a really fun celebration of what we do and our volunteers and, the people that support us.
Is there a potato in a bushel race? Like, how many potatoes can you get in a bushel fastest? Like, that would be a race.
We are doing like a scavenger hunt. I don't know if you knew a little bit more about it than I do. But.
Yeah, we are doing a scavenger hunt for kids, but for anyone, really, so that we can sort of illustrate how we glean, what we glean mm-hmm. in a fun way.
Sure. Okay, that sounds great.
Well, thanks again for being with us here on Trivial Thursday.
And thanks to Mick Jeffries for giving Brian Connors Mankey and me, Khaki Arch, the opportunity to sit in on Trivial Thursdays for him while he does his music mission.
Last bit of trivia for where I'll go out. 1943, Diamond, Missouri, the George Washington Carver National Monument becomes the first United States National Monument to honor an African-American. And with that, we will leave you with Proud to Be Black by Run DMC.
Nice.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
And then Amy Goodman will talk in just a minute as well. Thanks for joining us, everyone. And stay tuned for Democracy Now! And, of course, keep it locked on WRFL 88.1, Radio Free Lexington.